Yesterday, the Morning Call newspaper reported that, and I quote, "In a surprising turn, Pennsylvania is throwing the door wide open for industrial hemp production," end quote. Now, honestly, I don't think this was much of a surprise. If you were paying attention, you knew this is what was going to happen all along. Anyway, here's what happened. Yesterday, January 22nd, the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture released a statement saying that Secretary Redding, who's been on this show a couple of times, he said that he submitted a plan to the USDA that's going to allow full commercial production of industrial hemp. Here, I'll read you the press release from the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture. Agriculture Secretary Russell Redding today announced that the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture has submitted its state plan for industrial hemp to the United States Department of Agriculture and will reopen the 2019 program to include applications for commercial growing operations. Pennsylvania is only the second state to submit a plan to USDA. There, now that's the first paragraph. Keep in mind that the first state to submit the plan, of course, is Kentucky.
Industrial hemp.
All right, so that's exciting, but let's read a little further. It gets better. Today, the department also approved 84 permit applications. Over the past 2 years, the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture has administered the Industrial Hemp Research Pilot Program, legitimized by the 2014 Farm Bill and authorized in Pennsylvania statute by the Industrial Hemp Research Act. Acreage caps previously set at 100 acres have been lifted for the 84 approved applicants, and acreage will no longer be restricted under the new program. Additionally, there will not be a cap on the number of applications accepted for 2019. The 84 approved applications will be finalized first. Additional applications will be reviewed and processed on a first-come, first-served basis. The department has updated the fee structure for the 2019 industrial hemp program, creating savings for the already approved applicants. Okay, that's a big deal, okay? All right, this makes me proud to be from Pennsylvania. I'm proud that my state is taking this path. This is the smartest thing they could do with the hemp program. Open it up. Make it easy for industry to get its hands on as much of this crop as we can grow. And believe me, we know how to grow stuff here in PA. Okay, so I'm editorializing a bit here, but I believe hemp is going to not only save agriculture, but as we've seen in previous episodes of this podcast, save the world. Yeah, I'm talking about climate change. I'm talking about sequestering carbon in plant material. I'm talking about making everything we can out of hemp, capturing all that carbon. And we can make everything out of this plant. It's very versatile. Building materials, plastics, cars, medicine, all that stuff. And the sooner we get this plant into production, the sooner farmers can start saving the world. Now, I don't know or frankly care if you believe in climate change or not, because it's happening regardless of your belief structure. It's not a Chinese hoax. It's not a conspiracy of scientists trying to make money. It's not a talking point on some liberal politician's platform. It's the dumbest thing in the world for us not to be doing everything we can to take the CO2 out of the atmosphere. If you really want America to be great, then let's put American innovation to work here. Let's solve this on a huge scale. Let's live up to our history and our promise. Okay, all right, I'll climb down from my soapbox and get back to the press release from PDA. There's a key point here, something that Jesse Johnson from Purple Peace hinted at a few weeks ago on this podcast, and that's state control. She likened it to the state's control over alcohol. This isn't quite the same thing, but it's similar. And here's another paragraph from the PDA statement. Pennsylvania's plan will make industrial hemp subject to the Controlled Plant and Noxious Weed Committee, created under Act 46 of 2017. With the committee's approval, industrial hemp will become a controlled plant, which will require all growers to register and obtain permits through the department. The permit will include all information required by federal law for industrial hemp production and will allow enforcement necessary for any violation of permit conditions. Okay, so there you go. It's not a total free-for-all. And the state knows how important this crop is and how important this industry will be to the state. Here's the final paragraph of the statement. The plan that we have submitted to USDA certifies our commitment to creating the conditions for Pennsylvania to grow a profitable, sustainable, and in-demand product, added Redding. Over the past 2 years, through the research pilot program, we have demonstrated that we have the capability to build a hemp production regulatory program with the integrity and oversight that is needed. And there you go. So, Secretary Redding, if you're listening, I applaud you. You make me proud to be a citizen of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And hats off to your team there at the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture. You are making a huge difference to the future of agriculture and possibly to the world. And I'm not being hyperbolic there. So I thank you. Okay, so that's exciting news from Pennsylvania. And last week I mentioned that Canopy Growth, a Canadian company, announced plans to build a large hemp industrial park somewhere in New York State, in the southern tier, most likely. That's just above the Pennsylvania border. This is huge news for the hemp industry, and it's great for farmers. This is the Lancaster Farming Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Herlock, and on today's show, we're going to talk to Jordan Sinclair, Vice President of Communications at Canopy Growth Corporation. We'll hear all about the new industrial park and what it's going to mean for farmers. So stick around. Hey, listeners. If you're not a current subscriber to Lancaster Farming Newspaper, now's your chance. We have a special deal for you. Just go to lancasterfarming.com/podcastdeal for a discounted offer on the number one agricultural newspaper in the Mid-Atlantic region. So check it out, lancasterfarming.com/podcastdeal. Okay, back to the show. Before we hear my interview with Jordan Sinclair from Canopy Growth, I thought we should check in with Erica McBride Stark. She's the executive director of the Pennsylvania Hemp Industry Council. I wanted to get her take on the changes to the hemp program coming out of Secretary Redding's office. Hi, Erica. Welcome back to the show. So what do you think these changes are going to mean for farmers?
It means a lot to farmers. It means that obviously more people are going to have the opportunity to participate, especially being up at the farm show. There was a lot of interest from farmers who were disappointed that the deadline had already passed.
Right.
So this will give an opportunity for a lot more farmers to participate. Right. The lifting, and also the most important thing for farmers, I think, is going to be the new fee structure.
What do you know about that? Can you explain that a little further
for us? So the permits for the last couple of years were $2,000.
Right.
For a maximum of 100 acres. The new fee structure is $600 for up to 5 different locations with no acreage caps.
Okay.
So that's huge. That's a huge, huge difference.
Right. So you could have hemp plots all over the state and just be under one permit.
Yes. Okay. And not only that, you can have as many different area plots as you wish. And it's just an additional fee per each additional location.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
So this will give the ability for people to co-op and, you know, consolidate. I'm thinking particularly, you know, Lancaster County, like the, you know, the Plains sect, you know, Amish and Mennonite communities, mm-hmm. that, you know, may not each individually want to get their own permit. They can work together.
Okay. So would they need to form some kind of legal entity and then branch out from there?
Not necessarily. They would just need to have an individual can apply, and that whoever is the named applicant is the one that has to get the FBI background check.
Oh, okay.
And then for each individual location, if the applicant is not the one that owns that property, they have to have the owner of the property sign the state supplied lease agreement that authorizes the applicant to grow hemp on their land and allow the Department of Ag access to it to, you know, do the sampling and check for regrowth after the permit expires.
Okay.
So that will allow individuals to work together to apply in that way as well.
Are the permits for more than 1 year at a time?
No, I believe they are still for 1 year and they'll have to be renewed annually.
So what do you think this means to industry? You know, you think we'll see a flood of companies coming here to grow hemp?
I think we'll see significant investment in infrastructure now that the supply chain is there to support it.
Can you talk a little bit about the background checks?
The permit holder has to get the official FBI background check.
Okay.
Any individual that's involved with the crop as far as planting, maintaining, or harvesting, they still need to attest that they have not been convicted of a felony drug offense in the past 10 years.
Okay.
And the applicant is responsible for submitting a signed affidavit to that effect that these people who are listed, so that the people who are working on the crop still have to submit their name to the Department of Ag, and the permit holder, well, the permit holder has to submit a list of everybody that's helping them and attest with a sworn notarized affidavit that none of them have been convicted of a felony in the last 10 years.
Got it. But they're not subject to the background test.
Correct. So it is, it's on the applicant to, you know, be responsible for making sure that they trust the people that they have working for them, that they're telling the truth when they say they haven't been convicted. And that's a whole lot different than making each individual get an FBI background check.
Right. Just the sort of administrative work alone there would be quite extensive.
Right.
Okay. And PDA, have they been working with your group through this? Have you been consulting with them?
Well, I mean, we've been bugging them forever. So, you know, certainly they know this is what we wanted. And I like to think we helped influence it, but I know that collectively legislators, farmers, and citizens have all been pushing in the same direction. And I think a lot of it, they deserve a lot of credit for this. They did right by the hemp industry and by Pennsylvania. And I don't want to take anything away from that. We've been critical of them in the past from time to time. But now what they just did is all good. And they deserve credit for that.
Yes, indeed. This is an exciting time in the world of industrial hemp.
It is exciting. The good things are going to be happening all around this industry in this country. I can't wait to see it unfold.
Yeah, me too. Okay, thanks, Erica. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that was Erica Stark from the Pennsylvania Hemp Industry Council. All right, stay tuned, and we'll get right into my interview with Jordan Sinclair from Canopy Growth Corporation. All right, well, Jordan Sinclair, welcome to the Lancaster Farming Industrial Hemp Podcast. Could you introduce yourself for us?
Sure, yeah, sure. So my name is Jordan Sinclair, and I am the Vice President of Communications for Canopy Growth Corporation.
And Canopy Growth is a rather large cannabis company, is that correct?
Yeah, so I mean, we started in Canada in 2013 under a set of medical regulations that allowed for licensed production for medical patients. And then over a series of years, we've been ramping up in different countries, and obviously in Canada, now that we've got, you know, recreational legalization here for cannabis products. And then more recently with the Farm Bill, we've started to eye, you know, the potential of doing business in the United States. And that's culminated recently in announcing that we're going to do somewhere around $100 or $150 million worth of investment in the southern tier of New York State.
Okay. And how did you choose New York?
There's a lot of reasons, you know, that aligned for that to be the first step into the United States. We have partners in the U.S. called Constellation Brands. They are a beverage alcohol company that is based in Victor, New York.
Okay.
So that was a good starting point. And then there was also existing pilot programs that that Governor Cuomo's office had pointed out to us. So we were interested in pursuing that. And it seemed like a path to a license was the fastest for us in New York. So that was, those factors combined really made that the most attractive choice.
Okay. And now you have a license to grow hemp there in New York State?
We do. Yeah. So the license would allow us to grow in the process, but I would say that we're much more interested in the processing side of things.
Okay.
You know, we've got extraction facilities here in Canada, and we've gotten quite good at scaling those operations. When we first started doing extraction of THC rich cannabis up here a couple of years ago, what existed on the market wasn't scaled appropriately for commercial application.
Okay.
So we had to essentially go out and have our own solutions designed. And then when you consider how closely related hemp and cannabis are, really both are cannabis, the two plants, we can just apply them, you know. So we're more interested as in being a processor, and then we're in the process now of trying to source hemp in the United States and work with farmers to be able to to enter into partnerships so that we can have a good supply that goes into this eventual hemp industrial park.
Right. Okay. So you're more focused on the extraction of, you know, the compounds in the hemp flower. Are you looking at fiber too?
Yeah, I think that the park model is a pretty innovative idea. So what we're interested in our own application would be to take you know, the cannabinoids or CBD in the hemp and be able to formulate that, whether it was into medicines or more like wellness products.
Mm-hmm.
But a huge opportunity exists elsewhere. So we think we can be the anchor tenant in that park, and then hopefully we can create an ecosystem that can attract other businesses. So what we envision is something that where we could be a processor, an extractor, and then other businesses could come that were more interested in the fiber, in biofuel, in research, and all of that relies on crop input right. from farmers.
So the park would sort of be just like a place for synergy to happen amongst different processors.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly it. And, you know, for us, our headquarters, I'm not sure if any of the listeners have heard of us before, but we are, we're headquartered in a little town called Smiths Falls, Ontario, mm-hmm. Which is a town of about 9,000 people. And it used to be a Hershey chocolate factory where we're operating right now.
Okay.
And it was this interesting, you know, it was kind of this classic North American, you know, economic story. This town relied on one large employer. And when that manufacturing employer left, a lot of the jobs left the town. So when we came around in 2013 and we're looking for a place that we could grow, you know, a controlled cannabis crop, this was a great option for us. And they essentially took a chance on us because we could create a bunch of jobs and economic activity. So that's been a part of our story for a long time. And I think that's why the Southern Tier fits so well in with our business. You know, this is just, we can see a repeat happening down there where we can bring economic activity and jobs and investment into a part of the state that seems to need it.
Sure. And for agriculture too, the same sort of thing, you know, that area of New York probably has lots of dairy farms that may or may not be struggling, but this could be sort of a boon to farmers who wish to transition into another crop.
Yeah, and we've had a lot of interest. A day hasn't gone by since we put out that press release, mm-hmm. Where we haven't had inbound from farmers in the area, just wondering how they can get involved, wondering what the mechanics of a relationship might look like. So we're excited. You know, we're excited by this. I think it speaks to the willingness to have, you know, a hemp industry and a whole ecosystem
right.
You know, right there on the Southern Tier.
Now, maybe this is too far out for you to see, but, you know, how many acres would you see, you know, full production?
Yeah, I would say it probably is a little bit too early to be able to say down to an acre basis.
Mm-hmm.
I think the way that we're looking at this is, you know, how many of these parks would eventually be needed. Right? Is one in New York State going to be enough? Or should we, you know, start thinking about expanding? Is it going to be more than $100 or $150 million of investment?
Right.
But for us, that's the starting point. I would say, you know, this is just the very beginning. We've got to do some site selection first. We're running through due diligence on potential sites right now. We committed that we would have a site named within 100 days of that original announcement. So I think we've got probably, you know, 85 or so left to meet that commitment.
Okay.
And then from there, we'll be able to share some more specifics, but that'll include, you know, town halls and local engagement. So look for the Canopy Growth name and we'll share some more details as soon as they're available.
Okay. I would like to put in a plug for my state of Pennsylvania, great farmland. And I know the agriculture department just released yesterday, you know, a lift of the acreage cap that had been in place. So things are prime down here.
As we think about various states, you know, these sorts of things come up, right? We're very interested in what the state-to-state transportation laws are going to look like, whether or not this is going to be federally regulated and quite easy, or if it's going to take a little bit of coordination across states. So all of this is going to play out in the next couple of months. And a lot of that will dictate how big of an operation it's going to be.
Right. So recreational marijuana is not quite completely legal down here. Is that a problem for you, minor setback, or a non-issue?
Non-issue. And thank you for the options. we do recreational marijuana sales in Canada, but we operate in another 14 countries outside of Canada. And there isn't another recreational market where we're present. In all of those markets, we focus on medical cannabis sales. So for us, we can see the differences between the business streams. If it's hemp, if it's medical cannabis, if it's recreational cannabis, I think our expertise can flow across any of those industries. And we're just looking for, you know, for where we can apply that to be able to grow the business.
Okay. So what should farmers know about Canopy Growth?
They should know that we're focused on good downstream products, that, you know, we've got a ton of brands that I think will be able to resonate with consumers and people will be proud to have their inputs go into. And then we've got a lot of work that's gone into our own genetics. So you don't really need to have existing hemp genetics to be able to partner with us. We can offer that as a starting point. What we're really looking for is just long-term partners, who've got land or their own expertise, and essentially they can reach us quite easily. You know, we've got the website is canopygrowth.com, and if anybody is interested in doing business with us, they can reach us there.
Okay. Now, do you foresee contracting directly with farmers, or how would that sort of supply chain look?
I think it really depends on the farmer. It depends on the needs, right? But this is new for us, so we don't have a model that's set in stone, whether it was a cooperative or whether or not it was licensing genetics. I think there's ways that we can structure an agreement. So if you've got any questions, I would say, you know, don't hesitate. There's nothing but opportunity in the Farm Bill and in the legislation underneath of it.
Well, Jordan, do you have anything else you would like to share with our listeners of farmers down here?
I'd really say stay tuned. You know, I'm happy to come on. I'd be probably happier to come on in another couple months to be able to give you an update and tell you where we are. You know, this is very early days for us. It's the very beginning of something that we're all incredibly excited about, but we don't even yet have a site. So for us, this is a concept. We need great partners. So if you're listening, please do go to canopygrowth.com, learn more about us. You can contact us right there on the site.
All right. Sounds great. Jordan Sinclair, thank you for your time today.
Yeah, well, thank you very much.
That was Jordan Sinclair. He's the Vice President of Communications at Canopy Growth Corporation, a Canadian cannabis company that has just announced plans to build a hemp industrial park in New York State. So today's show, to me, sort of feels like a variety show. We've got different voices, different perspectives. There's a lot of exciting news, obviously, in industrial hemp. So I thought we'd bring in one more. Do you remember Jessie Johnson from Purple Peace? She's a healthcare and hemp consultant. I'd like to get her perspective on these changes coming out of the Ag Department. Okay, Jessie Johnson from Purple Peace, welcome back. How are you doing?
Thanks. I'm doing fantastic. I'm doing fantastic. We got excellent news today.
So, as a permit holder and an industrial hemp grower here in Pennsylvania, what's your take on these changes?
I was expecting these changes to come on. I just got, you know, word from other state clients that these changes are universal, that they're going all across now. So everyone's being approved, and this commercialization falls right in line with the results of our research, you know, the market research. Is there a market? Yes, there is. Clearly there is. And now commercialization has come above us, you know, come upon us. And I'm excited about it. And at the same time, I'm curious how they're going to handle us research.
Right.
What of our research, you know, entails this year, if it's going to change and what all that looks like.
Is this going to change your growing plans for this year?
Yes and no. I say yes because now I can help more farmers get the education that they need in order to have a successful crop. I'm capped at, I can't help you this year because I'm at my limit, you know. So now with 100 acres, you know, being lifted, now I can make it to a lot more farms. Now I can talk with a lot more farmers to, you know, go about the topography and the agronomy of their plant and how it, you know, and show them the market that would be buying their crop and, you know, run those numbers through. And so I've been busier, you know, than ever. But yeah, that's changing from a consulting aspect. From a farming, we've already set down what farming plans that we're doing. It's all part of our research program. Okay. So all of our growing is going to fall in line with the growing that we've laid out. And now we just get to have the, you know, my farming partners, we can expand, you know, we can get bigger. But the problem here is there, you don't, you know, it's a facade if you think that someone's going to go into 100 acres on day one. I have to tell farmers every day, you're getting five. Mm-hmm. All right. They say, well, I have 17,000 acres. I want to do 25 year one and 100 in year two. And my response is, you're getting five. and it's simply because I have to provide all of the education. And 100 acres is going to have so much demand and need that you're going to need at least 15 people on hand at any given moment for a 100-acre crop. And no one's doing it yet. So we'll get there, but not right out the gate.
Right.
So
baby
start
steps.
Small.
Yep. Okay. So what else should people be aware of?
So with this, what I want everyone to keep in mind here is this falls into line with the decriminalization that is coming down the pipe. Because your crop, if it goes to 0.3, you know, if it's high, if the THC in that plant creeps up higher than the legal limit right now, which is, you know, 0.03 in some states, you know, we have 0.1 in Virginia. So if it goes to 0.3, you know, you're looking above it, you're looking at setting everything on fire. Wow. You know, you're burning your crop down, and all of that work would be out the window because, you know, the infrastructure wasn't in place. And I do mean the testing infrastructure. If Secretary Reddy could do anything for us, it'd go tell the Department of Health. We get to use the same approved testing labs that they get to use. And if he doesn't do that and they don't agree to doing that, then we don't have a consensus. Then we're shipping all of our products out of the state of Pennsylvania just to have it tested. And that's a lot of money that the state's losing. And the other thing is, without being able to test your crop, you don't know how to process your crop. You can't, it's a shot in the dark. So the decriminalization needs to come on so that we can move above the 0.3, threshold up to the 1. And then the testing needs to happen. We can't, right now we're just in we have a buyer's market, but without the testing, we don't have anything. So that's what we need. You have to, and there's machinery that you can, equipment you can purchase, and you can test your plant, as much as you want on site, but it's $20,000 minimum, right, to purchase that equipment. And and the problem here is if you don't have enough test takers with the Department of Agriculture, which they don't, then you won't be able to harvest. You can't cut down your harvest without a test. So otherwise, you could be growing you can be growing marijuana out there. So you have to test the crop before you can harvest the crop. And we don't have the equipment yet. So Joe, the 5 acres is really where it's at.
Okay. So still some kinks to work out.
Oh, yeah. Some kinks, but we're well on our way.
Good. Okay. Well, hey, I appreciate your time.
You're very welcome, Eric.
All right. That was Jessie Johnson. If you want to get in touch with her, you can find her at purplepeace.com. Now, some of you who read our newspaper are familiar with our B section. It's sort of like the home and family and the food and recipe section. There's also a part of it that's called You Ask, You Answer, where people write in a question and then other people will write in an answer. It's sort of like a really slow version of Google. But we have lots of readers who, they are plain sect farmers. They don't really have internet. So it's a very, very popular part of our newspaper. I'm going to try something like that here on our podcast. Right, so yesterday I got an email from a listener named Jane, and she writes, "I would like to live in a yurt made from hemp. How would I go about getting one? I live in Nebraska." Okay, so there it is. If anyone out there has any information about yurts made out of hemp that our listener Jane in Nebraska could utilize, please get in touch with me at podcast@lancasterfarming.com. And if you have other questions about hemp or the hemp industry, send them to me and I'll try to find an answer for you. Okay? So, all right. Well, thank you very much. My name is Eric Herlock. I am your host and I'm also the digital editor at Lancaster Farming Newspaper. And I really appreciate your listenership. So thanks again. And until next time, I'll see you in the newspaper.